basically what we'll try to do is go through the Haftarah of this week's Sedra every week. Both just going through understanding what it says. You know, very often the Haftarah is a difficult language to understand. But also try to get a sense of the theme, and when it's relevant, you know, the Haftarah is always picked from Navi to try to parallel the themes in the Parsha. We'll try to figure out that connection between the Haftarah on the one hand and the Parsha on the other hand. And specifically tonight, we'll see, I think, that understanding the Haftarah properly really will give us, I think, a new insight into a particular episode which is related in the Parsha. If you have a stone Chumash, it's 11:33 in the back. And the Haftarah for Lech Lecha. The Haftarah is taken from Yeshaya, the Navi Yeshaya, Perek Mem. Actually, the first three Haftarahs of the cycle have all been from Yeshaya so far. We didn't have class for Gracious and Noach, but so far those two Haftarahs were also taken from Yeshaya. In order to properly understand the Haftarah itself, we have to put the Haftarah into the context of Sefer Yeshaya, where it's originally lifted from. Now, sometimes you learn a Haftarah, you lose sight of the fact that it's actually part of a broader Navi. And here, understanding the context of the Navi is essential to understanding the Haftarah. Yeshaya Perek Mem is distinguished not so much for this Haftarah, which is the last couple of psukim of Mem, Himtim and Mem Aleph, but the beginning of Mem is a particularly famous passage in Sefer Yeshaya. Nachamu, Nachamu, Ami, Yomar Elokeichem. That's the beginning of Perek Mem in Yeshaya. Yeshaya Hanavi prophetically foresaw when the Jews would be exiled by the Babylonians and carried off to Babel, and he knew that they were going to be in this Golus. He knew this Golus was going to be very depressing. It was going to get them down. And basically, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, at the beginning of Perek Mem of Yeshaya, tells the Nevi'im, Nachamu, Nachamu, Ami, you Nevi'im, you prophets, give nechama, give consolation to my people. Don't worry, the Golus is going to come to an end. Moshiach is going to come, and ultimately you're going to be redeemed from the Golus in which you find yourselves. Right? That's the theme of Yeshaya Perek Mem. And, it's a haftarah of nechama, a haftarah of consolation. And it's for that reason, of course, that that haftarah, the beginning of Perek Mem, is laid on Shabbos Nachamu. Shabbos Nachamu takes its name from the opening words of that prophecy, Nachamu, Nachamu, Ami. Our Haftarah is contiguous in the Navi with the Haftarah of Shabbos Nachamu. Basically, if you took out a Sefer Yeshaya, you would start from Perek Mem at the beginning. That's the beginning of the Haftarah of Shabbos Nachamu. When you get to the end of the Haftarah of Shabbos Nachamu, the very next Pasuk is Chof Zayin, which is the beginning of our Haftarah, Lomo Somar Yaakov U'Sedaber Yisrael. Right? So the theme in this Haftarah is following directly on the theme in the Haftarah of Shabbos Nachamu. Basically, the Jewish people are in Golos. The people are in Golos. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is doing his best to try to give them a sense of consolation, the long and difficult Golos notwithstanding. And the Haftarah starts off with Klal Yisrael in a pretty despondent mood. Lama somar Yaakov ustaber Yisrael nistero darki me'ashem u'me'elokai mishpoti yavor. Says the Ribbono Shel Olam to Yaakov, to Yisrael, and to the Jewish people, why is it that you're constantly going around saying, quote unquote, nistero darki me'ashem, my path has been hidden from the Ribbono Shel Olam? In other words, Klal Yisrael and the Golos was constantly talking about how basically God has forgotten me. God obviously doesn't seem to be so interested in protecting me or in my fate, because here I am in the Golos, and from the perspective of the Jewish people, HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't seem to be doing anything to be taking me out of Golos. Nistar darki me Hashem, my path has been hidden from Hashem, u'me'elokai mishpoti ya'avor, and my mishpat, my court case, so to speak, is, you know, sitting at the bottom of the pile of files, so to speak, on HaKadosh Baruch Hu's desk, where he took the file and he threw it out altogether. It doesn't look like the Ribbono Shel Olam is dealing with my case at all. I'm just, you know, I took the number, I'm waiting for the number to be called, and it's like, you know, the DMV before they did all the reforms in the DMV, right? So, that's what Klal Yisrael says. That's what it feels like in Galus. So answers HaKadosh Baruch Hu, don't despair. Halo yodato imlo shomato. You must know, and you must have heard, that the following is true. That Elokei Olam Hashem, that God is the God of the entire world. The Radak explains over here that Elokei refers specifically to God as the judge. We find in Chumash that the word Elohim, right, can refer to an earthly judge just as much as it refers to HaKadosh Baruch Hu as being the celestial judge. So says the Radak, Elokei Olam Hashem means that Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is the judge of the entire world. Don't think that God walked away from the world, Cholila, but God in fact is the judge of the world. Borei Ketzos Ha'aretz, He created even the corners of the world. He is the creator. Lo Yi'af V'lo Yigah, and He's never tired, He never gets worn out. In other words, says the Radak, you have to know, Klal Yisrael, that there's certain propositions of faith which are essential for you to understand. God, first of all, created the world. Right? And as we've mentioned several times in different contexts, Yiddishkeit teaches that HaKadosh Baruch Hu not only created the world, but is Mashkiach in the world. There's a notion of providence. God, you know, is concerned about the doings of the world, as opposed to the conception of the deists throughout history. The deists believe that God simply created the world like a watchmaker makes a watch. He winds it up and it goes on its own. Says Yeshaya Novi, no, that's not true. Elokei Olam Hashem. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the judge of the world. There's a notion of providence, of Hashgacha. Lo Yi'af V'lo Yigah. And God is constantly, so to speak, turning the world around. You'll say God gets tired. You know, God, maybe he gets kivyocha worn out by constantly supervising the world and making sure that it runs. No, lo yi'af, lo yigah. He's never going to get tired. You know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is constantly, you know, on task 24/7. He's watching over the world. It's a constant patrol. So therefore, rest assured, says the Novi to Klal Yisrael, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to take care of you. He's not going to let you languish forever in Golos. So if he's not going to let us languish forever in Golos, so why are we here? Why is the Golos still going on? Why hasn't HaKadosh Baruch Hu taken us out yet? So says the Pasuk, Ein Cheker L'Svun Aso, but you have to realize, says the Radak, there's no way for a human being to really be able to understand the mind of God. Right? In other words, that's the classic answer, which is really, it's not an answer, but it's the only answer to the quandary of Tzaddik V'Ra'lo. Right? How is it that righteous people suffer in the world? So the answer basically is, we don't know. Ein Cheker L'Svun Aso. God has the answer, but ultimately there's no real substantial way that we human beings can probe the mind of God. We can't figure out ultimately why HaKadosh Baruch Hu chooses to run the world in the way in which he does. We have certain hints, we have certain clues that Chazal tell us, that the Pesukim tell us, but ultimately we haven't got a clue. We haven't really got an idea. So Ein Cheker L'Svun Aso, says the Radak, is basically a caveat at the end of this pasuk. Yes, you have to believe God is in charge, God is running the world, but ultimately we can't understand. We have faith that the Golos is going to come to an end, but how, what, where, and why, that we don't know. But yet, for the duration, says the pasuk, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us the wherewithal to be able to withstand the Golos. And here there's this, I think, you know, just... For Klal Yisrael collectively, but also for all of us personally, there's a tremendous message over here. I mean, most people sooner or later in life go through tragedies and difficulties. It's Galgal Achozer Ba'olam. In the words of Chazal, it's a cycle that turns around in the world. There's ultimately no escape from tragedies and difficulties in life. And as Rav Soloveitchik pointed out, we ultimately can't answer the question, why do these things happen? But the more productive question for us to ask is, what can we do in response to tragedies befalling us and difficult times befalling us? So in a similar sense, the Novi says, Ein Cheker L'Svun Aso. We can't ultimately understand why the Golos is here, or why terrible things happen to people in life. But what we do know is that Nosein L'Yoyiv Koach, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us the strength, the weary person, the person who's gone through personal tragedies, or Klal Yisrael have gone through national tragedies, and the nation is geshmetet, you know, they're all wiped out from all the difficulties. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is no sein layoyev koach. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us the strength to be able to get through all these tragedies. We may not be able to answer the question why, but at least he props us up so that we can make it on to the next step. And for those who lack strength, Atzma Yarbe, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will provide and multiply the amount of strength that he gives so we can make it through the tragedies. The beginning of this pasuk, Nosen Layoif Koach, is probably familiar to us besides the Haftarah, because it's part of the daily davening, brachos. Right? It all comes back to tefillah. You can't escape tefillah even when you're trying to learn haftaras. So Rav Shimon Schwab, Sechet Tzadik Livracha, in his Sefer on the tefillah, writes that based on this pasuk in Yeshaya, he believes that the pshat and the bracha, which we say on a daily basis, is ultimately about the position of Klal Yisrael and the Golos. Right? We say Baruch Anosen Layoif Koach. Right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu, blessed is HaKadosh Baruch Hu who gives strength to the weary. Now, the simple interpretation of that bracha is, I woke up, I only had 4.5 hours sleep, you know, I feel like I'm about to keel over any minute now, but somehow HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives me the strength, you know, maybe caffeine has something to do with it also, but somehow HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives me the strength to be able to make it through the day. Baruch Hashem, Baruch Atah Hashem, Elokeinu Melech HaOlam, Hanosein LaYoyif Koach. We understand that bracha in very personal terms. Says Rav Schwab, that's true, but on a deeper level, really the bracha is talking about the strength the Ribbono Shel Olam gives the Jewish people to withstand the galus. That's really the intent, says Rav Schwab, of the bracha we're making every morning. And the proof of the pudding, says Rav Schwab, is the pasuk. You go back to the original context. In context over here, Nosein LaYoyif Koach is not talking about how, you know, you felt like you were going to fall out of bed the minute you got out of bed, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu miraculously got you to the bathroom, got you to the kitchen, got you out the front door, and made sure that you even remembered to put on your coat before you discovered that it was 70 degrees outside on a, you know, beautiful November morning. So, you know, you even managed to put on your coat on the way outside. Says Rav Schwab, that's not what the Pasuk is talking about. The Pasuk is talking about Klal Yisrael and the Golos, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu giving us the wherewithal to make it through. That's ultimately what the Bracha is talking about on a daily basis as well. The Afu Ne'orim V'Yigo'u U'Bachurim Kashol Yikoshenu. But V'Koveh Hashem Yachlifu Koach Yalu Eivr Kanesharim Yorutsu V'Lo Yigo'u Yelchu V'Lo Yi'ofu. Says the Pasuk, appearances are sometimes deceiving. And the Pasuk quotes, refers to the experiences of Ne'orim and Bachurim. Without going into the exact differences between Ne'orim and Bachurim, they basically mean young men. Now, youth, right? Now, if you wanted to pick the prototype of a strong, healthy individual, you'd probably pick a young man to represent that prototype. And yet, says the Novi, you know, it often happens in life that v'yiyofu ne'orim v'yigo'u, that even these young boys who seem to be so strong and so energetic will get tired out. U'bachurim koshol yikoshelu, and as the young men are running, they're going to stumble. You know, appearances can be deceiving. In this context, the ne'orim and bachurim are referring to the enemies of the Jewish people. Right? The enemies of the Jewish people often seem to have the vitality of youth. They often seem to, you know, have strength on their side. They often seem to have power on their side. They often seem to have the upper hand. They often seem to be getting the best of us. It looks like B'derech HaTeva, they're definitely going to win. We're definitely going to lose. But says the Navi, and again, remember to whom the Navi is addressing this. The Jewish people are in Galus. They've just been conquered by a superpower, by Bavel, who's managed to subdue the entire civilized world at that time under their dominion. So Bavel of that time certainly represents the Bachurim, the Ne'orim, those who are young, those who seem to have strength, those who seem to have power. But says the Navi, don't worry, you know, you'll see, this guy looks strong, this empire looks strong, but when they start running the marathon, so all of a sudden, you know, you'll see they're going to drop off, you know, somewhere soon after the beginning.
They are not here and we are still here.
Which is true, right? And it's the Ne'orim, the Bachurim, the Babylonians were the up and coming, right? The Jews, you know, they were the has-beens, right? But yet somehow the Jews are still here, and what's the last time you ever met a Babylonian, right? They're not exactly around. However, the Koveh Hashem, those who believe, who have faith in Hashem, Yachlifu Koach, they'll be able somehow to keep exchanging and getting more and more strength. Even, you know, just, I think the imagery that's over here is just like when the battery, we have rechargeable batteries. I mean, obviously this is not exactly what Yeshaya had in mind, although he wasn't Novi. But, you know, for us, you know, you think about rechargeable batteries, the battery is just about used up. So you recharge it, you exchange it, and now it's back and it's running just as it was before. Bekovei Hashem, if you have faith in the Ribono Shel Olam, Yachlifu Koach, you can recharge your batteries. The batteries of somebody who believes in HaKadosh Baruch Hu are rechargeable. Yalu Ever Kanesharim, they will produce a limb just like the eagles. Now what does that mean? They'll produce a limb just like the eagles. So let me read you something fascinating from the Radak. And you'll tell me what this reminds you of. Maybe you won't tell me what it reminds you of. I'll tell you what it reminds me of. Yalu Ever Kanesharim. Kosav Rabbeinu Sadia, says the Radak. The Radak, by the way, is Rav David Kimchi, is one of the classic commentators on Nach. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Rav David Kimchi, by profession, actually was a Cheder Rebbe. He produced, the major commentary on Nach to this day is the Radak. He was a Cheder Rebbe. He taught little children. He actually learned Nach, because we taught little children. Kosav Rabbeinu Sadia. So Rabbeinu Sadia, the famous Rav Sadia Gaon, writes as follows: Ki hanesher ya'ale le'eser shonim gavoa me'od al p'nei rakiya hashamayim. The nesher, I translated nesher as eagle. Maybe we'll see in a moment that's not the best translation. But the nesher, some kind of big bird, every 10 years flies up very, very high. Okay, we'll get there. So at least one person is thinking that direction. The eagle every 10 years flies up very, very high. V'kariv l'chom ha'esh, and it comes very close to the fire. Sounds like to the sun. Right? Comes very close to the sun. V'apil atzmo layom meirov chumo, and the sun is so hot when the eagle comes up close to the sun, it's so hot that the eagle plunges itself back down into the sea. V'maret, and it basically falls apart. V'yischadesh achar kein, but somehow the nesher, the eagle, rejuvenates, right? It comes back, even after it plummeted from the skies into the sea. V'ya'ale ever, and it regrows its limbs, right? To me, at least, you think about rejuvenating limbs, it reminds you of a starfish, right? Where you cut off one of the limbs and it grows back, right? Regenerates. But as Rav Sadia Gaon says, that's true of this nesher. The nesher, every 10 years, flies up to the sun, is knocked out, falls down into the sea, sort of disintegrates, and then rejuvenates, regenerates itself. The evarim, the limbs of the nesher, are regrown. The yashuv limei alumov, and it goes back just like it was when it was to its youth. V'chein kol eser shonim ad meya, and that happens in the nesher's lifetime every decade, every 10 years, until the nesher reaches the ripe old age of 100. U'v'shnas hameya, and when it reaches 100, yale kimin hago, it goes up as it always does. V'yupol bayom, and it falls into the sea. V'yomos, and that's this. Right? It has 10 lives. Right? 10 lives. One more life than the cat. Right? So that's what Sadia writes. That's the nesher. Again, he might have interpreted Nesher as the phoenix. And it's interesting. In other words,
but the Nesher is classically always an eagle.
Right, Nesher is classically always an eagle. But in other words, it could, I don't know.
Phoenix rising.
It does look like an eagle. So I think Rav Sadia interpreted, at least in this pasuk, that Yalu Aver Kanasharim is a reference to the notion of a phoenix, right? That it rejuvenates itself. And the Navi is making reference to the Nesharim, to the Nesher, as a metaphor for Klal Yisrael, right? And the truth is, it happens to be a beautiful metaphor for Klal Yisrael. How many times does Klal Yisrael rise up, get scorched, looks like it fell apart into the sea, and then boom, Yalu Aver Kanasharim, all of a sudden it jumps up back out of the sea, it rises from the ashes, and it's ready to go again. Right? Presumably the last part of the legend doesn't really apply to Klal Yisrael, about what happens at the year 100. Okay, but
the Avram's 10 tests or something, it became from Avram to Abraham after 100 years.
Yeah, that's different. Oh, that's interesting. Then he got the extra insurance. He got the extra insurance of hay after 100, so it took him out of Nesherville. Right.
Another test.
10 tests. Right. Maybe. Enochinami. So Yorutsu v'lo yigo, Yelchu v'lo yiyofu. The Klal Yisrael, or the Kovei Hashem, those who have faith in the Ribono Shel Olam, again, they're constantly rejuvenating themselves. Yachlifu koach, they recharge the batteries. They can run, they'll run the marathon, but even in the hot weather, they won't get tired. Yelchu v'lo yafu, they'll go where they have to go, they won't be worn out. Right? So in these few psukim, these five psukim, basically the Navi has outlined for us already, the Navi has faced off against a Klal Yisrael who are basically despondent. They're in Golus. They're coming to the Navi and saying, okay, this is it, right? I mean, this is the end of Jewish history. We went into Bavel. The Jewish state is no more. The Beis HaMikdash is no more. And that's it. This is the final chapter over here. And the message that the Navi is giving to Klal Yisrael is basically, don't give up. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is with you. We can't understand exactly the cheshbonos of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but realize that even though this looks like a setback, it's temporary. It's Yalu Aver Kadoshorim. Just you wait. You're going to turn around and you're going to rejuvenate yourselves and be as great as you once were. Now, for us, it's somewhat glib to say that, right? Because we've seen the ups and downs of the Jewish people through history. I think it's important to remember that this is really the first down of certainly of this magnitude that the Jewish people have experienced. Right? This is the first Galus. Right? Galus Bavel. The first time the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, the first time that the Jews are thrown out of Eretz Yisrael. It's even more traumatic than anything we can imagine, because in the back of our minds, we've seen the ups and downs of Klal Yisrael. We know that even when things get bad, somehow we have this miraculous ability to spring back. They didn't know that. Right? They really thought that it was all over once the Jewish people were exiled from Eretz Yisrael.
We never had their glory.
We never had their glory. Right, right. But at the
somewhere in the down
there. Right, yeah. But at the same time, they never
know that they came out of Bavel.
Right.
It's different. You're looking that way.
Right.
They don't know that they'll ever.
Right. They
don't see an end.
They don't see an end.
Should.
Right. And in general history, once a nation is exiled, that's it. Right. That's the end. You know, there's nothing more to talk about. So this is really a message of hope, which the Novi is giving to them, again, following on the heels of Nachamu, Nachamu Ami. At this point, we go into Perek Mem Aleph, and the basic theme is the same, but there's a little bit of a switch, and here we see the direct connection between the Haftarah and the Kriyas Haftarah of Lech Lecha. Says the Ribbono Shel Olam, Hacharishu Eilai Iyim, all of you islands, all of you inhabitants of the islands, which is a reference to the non-Jewish nations at large. Hachrishu Eli, all of you stop talking, says the Ribbono Shel Olam, and listen to me. Right? Listen to me, I have something to tell you. Ulu'umim yachlifu koach. And all of the nations of the world, yachlifu koach, they're revving up, they're gearing up, they're strengthening themselves to come and approach me. Now, Yachlifu Koach, we just had in the last pasuk with regard to the Kovei Hashem, right? Here, just in context, we have to translate the phrase a little bit differently. Yachlifu Koach in the last pasuk was talking about those who believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu having the ability to rejuvenate, to recharge their batteries. Here, as we'll see just from context, the nations of the world are about to approach HaKadosh Baruch Hu to, so to speak, wage war against HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. The nations of the world are just renewing their own strength. They're trying to gather up all the tainas, all the claims they possibly can have to come before the Ribbono Shel Olam and try to get the best of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in an argument. Yigshu oz yidaberu. They're coming close. They're coming, you know, before the judge's desk, so to speak. Oz yidaberu, and each of them is speaking. Yachdov la mishpat nekrovos. It says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm ready to take you on. You non-Jewish nations are coming to me, seeking to have an ideological war with me, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yachdov l'anishpat nekrovos. So let's start the court case, and we'll each present our respective sides. And here comes the relationship to our parsha. Mi heir mi mizrach. Who was it who aroused that person from the east? Sedek yikro'ehu liraglo. Wherever that person went, he would always spread the ideals of justice. Yitain lefanav goyim umelochim yard. God placed, or will place, we'll have to define the tense of the verb in a moment, God either placed or will place the other nations in front of him. and subdue the kings in front of him? In other words, this person who has been aroused from the east will or did conquer various kings. Iten ke'afar charbo, his sword will cause or did cause its victims to become like dust. Kikashli dof kashto, when he shot his arrow at them, they were the victims were made like the straw that is pushed aside and thrown away without too much difficulty. Yir defame ya'avor shalom, this person from the east either pursued them or will pursue them, his enemies, but still ya'avor shalom, this person himself will not be harmed, he'll be able to pass over the battlefield in peace. Orach biraglov lo yavo, Orach, I'll give you the Radak's interpretation. It's a little bit different from Art Scroll over here. Orach, a difficulty or evil, biraglov lo yavo, never pursued him, never came about as a result of his travels. He was able to conquer all of these kings, all of these nations, and there was never any evil. Orach here, the Radak says, is evil. There was never any evil that attached itself to his feet. Evil never pursued him.
Who's he talking about?
About Babylon. Right. Oh, so if you look, the Art Scroll translates in line with most Mefarshim. If you look in Pasuk 2 in the Art Scroll, who aroused Abraham from the east? Right. This is Chazal already back in the Midrashim say that this is talking about Avram and the Abraham, right? And the vast majority of Mefarshim on this Pasuk in Yeshaya explain that what we're talking about is Avram, and specifically say those Mefarshim, this is a reference to the Milchama, the war which Avram Avinu has with the four kings, with Kedar La'omer, right? And let's go back and we'll just read it in that light. Mehi ir mimizrach, after all, who was it who aroused Avram Avinu from the east? Avram Avinu came originally from Ur Kasdim, right? He was coming from the area of Bavel and moving west towards Eretz Yisrael, right? So he was from the east. Tzedek yikra'eyu liraglo, wherever Avram Avinu went, he spread the ideals of tzedek, of justice. He was constantly, yes, hanefesh asher asu b'charon, right? Avram Avinu was constantly looking to convert individuals to the belief in God. Yitein lefanav goyim u'malachim yar. Here we would have to interpret this phrase as if it was in the past tense. Right, God placed kings before him and subdued nations in front of Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu was basically able to take on four kings of what apparently were four mighty nations of that time and destroy them. Yitein ki'afar charbo kikash nidof kashta. Now this is the source for a famous statement in Chazal, which we probably learned way back when. Avraham Avinu, when he shows up to fight before Malachim, so first of all, Chazal tell us he had a pretty simple army, right? It was Avram Avinu and Eliezer, right? Avram Avinu was the cavalry, and Eliezer was the infantry. And that was the whole extent of the army. Okay, I guess it's pretty good. You know, he's the colonel, he's the general. Okay, you know, not too much difficulty. But Chazal also tell us that how did Avram Avinu and Eliezer wage war against the enemy? So they didn't come with conventional weapons. They picked up the dust and they threw it at the enemy to form a lochim, and the dust turned into a sword. But they took up straw and they threw it at the enemy, and the straw turned into arrows. Where on earth did they get this idea from? Right, if you remember, there's a famous story that Nochum Ishgamzu, right? He comes with a trunk in front of the Roman emperor. And he starts telling the Roman emperor, they open it up, there's dirt inside. He tells the Roman emperor, no, this dirt, this is special dirt, you know, this is Avram Avinu dirt. You throw the dirt at the enemies and it turns into all kinds of weapons, you know, arrows and swords and all of that. Where did Chazal get that from? I mean, that's not in the Psukim and Bereishis. So it's this pasuk, right? Yitein ke'afar charbo, right? Which literally, again, we translated it before, is he... Avraham Avinu made his victims of the sword like they were dust. But the word victims is not actually there in the pasuk. Yiten ke'afar charbo, he took earth and made it as if it was his sword. Kikash nidof kashta, right? He took straw and that became his arrows. Right? That is a way to read the pasuk literally. So again, if you want to read the pasuk that way, this pasuk is the source for that statement in Chazal that Avraham Avinu really miraculously took these substances and turned them into weapons to fight against the enemy. Still a very bizarre statement. I mean, what was Avraham Avinu thinking when he went out to war? I mean, it's nice that he got there and this trick happened to work for him, okay, but I mean, seems like a bizarre strategy to go into war. What are you bringing to war? Nothing. I bet if we get there, we just throw the dirt. You know, that will probably turn into swords and arrows. What was the cheshbon exactly? Why would you, in Somchan al Hanes? I mean, what was he thinking? So we'll try to answer that, Bezus Hashem, why Chazal described the battle in such miraculous terms.
How do you say it that way? Wouldn't the chas be on the other words? Like kikashto
Poetically though, the kof can switch. In other words, his keshes was kikash nidach, and what became his keshes started off kikash nidach. I guess that's how you'd explain it. But the connection between the clay zion, those the weapons that he used, and the natural elements which he adapted for use, you know, that's based on this pasuk. So Yir defame yavor shalom, he pursued them. Right, pasuk in this week's sedra, Vayirdof Adon. Right, he pursued them, he ran after them. Right, and Yavor Shalom, and nothing happened to him. Arach biraglov lo yavo, there was no evil that found itself at his feet.
How come?
Now,
Orachis,
the Razak tells you. Yesh meforshim Orach rab biraglov lo yavo, shlo karlo shum rab aderechahi. Oh, I take it back. And those you have to insert the word ra, not that orach is a derech, but orach ra biraglov lo yavo. Right? There was no evil path that he put his feet upon. Right? 100%. Okay. Now, this is clearly the connection between our parsha and the haftarah. I mean, after all, according to most mefarshim, these two psukim are describing or retelling the events that happened in the Parshas HaShavua. What's not totally clear is where these psukim fit in the context of Yeshaya. Right? Again, Yeshaya Novi is trying to give chizuk to the Jewish people who are in Galus, who are suffering through Galus Bavel. Why are we schlepping out the story of Avraham Avinu and the Arba Melachim all of a sudden, you know, in the middle of this discussion? Just before we answer that question, we should point out that not all the Mefarshim explain that we're talking about Avraham Avinu over here. Ibn Ezra on our pasuk says that the person in question is Koresh, Cyrus, who's the king of Persia, who's ultimately going to end the Galus Bavel. Right? When the Persians conquer the Babylonians, it's Koresh, Cyrus, who gives the Jews permission to go back to Eretz Yisrael and rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. And the truth is, you know, you try to fit that in, it works. May heir mi mizrach. Who was the one who was aroused from the east? Now, Persia is still to the east, right? I mean, from the perspective of Bavel, Persia, right? Iran, Iraq, right? And from the perspective of Bavel, Persia is still out there to the east. Yitain, and then we can understand the future tense. Yitain lefan of Goyim ulachim yard. Koresh will be given dominion over the kings, i.e. the kings of Bavel, because Koresh and the Persians are going to conquer the Babylonian Empire and subdue it. Right? And this is a prediction, says the Ibn Ezra. This is not a retrospective on the past. This is not about history. This is a prediction about the imminent arrival of Koresh, who's going to come, destroy the Babylonian Empire, and allow the Jewish people to go back to Eretz Yisrael. That's the prediction over here. Right. It makes a certain sense in the context, because
then you wonder why this was
right. So Lachar, according to the Ibn Ezra, I don't know what the Ibn Ezra laned in his shul. Right. I don't know what the Ibn Ezra laned in his shul, but according to the Ibn Ezra, the connection to the Pasha is much weaker. However, according to the Ibn Ezra, it probably fits into context a little smoother, because the non-Jewish nations are coming to HaKadosh Baruch Hu with a taina. Hey, looks like you forgot your people, the Jewish people, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, just you wait. next chapter in the history book, you know, the Babylonian Empire is going to be destroyed, the Persians are going to take over, and the Jews are going to go back to Eretz Yisrael. So you see, the last laugh is going to be on the Babylonians. Taking that one step further, says the Malbim, we're not talking about Avraham Avinu, we're not talking about Koresh, we're talking about Moshiach. Says the Malbim, that's what the Pasuk is talking about. Right? Go for broke. What do you mean? Koresh is going to redeem the Jewish people? That's going to be a temporary redemption. The Pasuk is talking about the Gula Asida, the ultimate redemption. Who's the one who's going to come from the east and spread the ideals of justice around the world and subdue all of the nations of the world under the dominion of the Jewish people? That's Mashiach Tzidkenu. That's what the Pesukim are talking about, says the Malbim. Again, and the future tense would make a lot more sense according to the Malbim's interpretation than if we say that it's looking backwards and talking about Avraham Avinu. I think we'll see that obviously, although these are three different interpretations, the Yesod, as we'll see in a few moments, the Yesod, the essence of these three interpretations boils down to the same thing. The message, whether the Pasuk is talking about Avraham Avinu or about Koresh or about the Melech HaMoshiach, the ultimate message, as I think we'll see in a few moments, comes down to the same thing. Because Pasuk Dalit goes on to say, to make a statement. Mi fa'al ve'asa? Who was the one who did all these things? Kore hadaros me'rosh? The one who foresaw all of the future history of the generations from the beginning? Ani Hashem rishon? V'yes achronim anihu? I am HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who was first in the world, and yet I am with the later ones as well. Now we just translated that. Okay, now that we translated that, what does that mean? Right? Kari Hadaros Merosh, HaKadosh Baruch Hu foresees all of the generations from the beginning. I am the first, and yet I am with all of the last ones also. What's that?
Mashiach.
Okay, down the way to Mashiach. Let's assume for a moment, like the vast majority of Meforshim, that the previous Pesukim were talking about Avraham Avinu. And basically the Pesukim underscored the point that Avraham Avinu was able to miraculously win a very difficult battle against four different kingdoms, four Malachim. So says this Pasuk, Ani Hashem Rishon, I am HaKadosh Baruch Hu who was there in the beginning with Avraham Avinu, V'yes Achronim Ani Hu. But my providence for the Jewish people did not stop with Avraham Avinu, but it extends to the later generations who will follow after Avraham Avinu as well. In other words, says this Pasuk, the story of Avraham Avinu is a model from which the later generations can learn. It's not just an isolated event in history. You know, Avraham Avinu, you know, had a really nice victory over four kings. Avraham Avinu's victory sets the stage for later Jewish history. And I think when you look at it from that perspective, we can understand the fact that Chazal attribute tremendous miracles to the victory which Avraham Avinu performs against the four kings. Again, Chazal basically tell us, against the simple reading of the Pesukim, that Avraham Avinu did not go with 318 men to do battle against the four kingdoms. Instead, it was basically Avraham and Eliezer, you know, the dynamic duo, take on the four kingdoms. And plus, you know, Chazal tell us they really were not prepared in terms of war. You know, they came with sticks and stones, right? So in this case, the sticks and stones, Taka, you know, broke their bones. And, you know, it was miraculous. Why did Chazal attribute so many miracles, which are not in the Pesukim, to the story of the four Malachim? So I think the answer is that Avraham Avinu against the four Malachim is the prototype of the Rabbim Be'ad Me'atim, of the notion that the Jewish people, despite the fact that we're few in number, somehow managed throughout history to outlive and overcome nations and empires that are much greater than us. And the more ridiculous the odds are, as the more Chazal can tell us how Avraham Avinu was there with just Eliezer, they didn't really have any weapons, and yet they managed to vanquish the enemy anyway, the more it just underscores the miraculous nature of the Jewish people, that throughout history we're nothing, we're the underdog, we look like we're about to be destroyed, we have these vast odds that are up against us, and yet the example of Avraham Avinu is Jewish people never give up. Even when you're facing off against four Malachim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has the ability to give you the the wherewithal to be able to be victorious and to ultimately triumph. That's the message of Avraham Avinu in the four Malachim. Says Yeshaya Hanavi to the people who are sitting in Golis and Bavel, remember the story of Avraham Avinu. Because the same way Avraham Avinu was able to defeat the Malachim, you're going to come out of this Golis where you seem to be overwhelmed by Malchus Bavel. Ani Hashem Rishon, I'm HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who's with Avraham Avinu. Way back when, I was Kore Hadoros Meirosh. I foresaw what was going to happen. I made Avraham Avinu and his victory a historical precedent for everything that would happen down the line. For the fact that the Jewish people will never be overwhelmed despite all the odds. Yes, Achronim Anihu, and even with the later generations, you can take comfort from the example of Avraham Avinu. Based on that, if that's the message of this Haftarah, right, is that the Haftarah tells us that the victory Avraham Avinu performs against the four Malachim is not just an isolated historical incident, but it really sets the stage for the notion that Klal Yisrael have the ability to overcome all of the anti-Semites and all of the obstacles and all of the gullius and all the difficulties which we experience throughout history along the lines of Maisa Avos Siman Labanim, that whatever the Avos go through is ultimately a historical precedent for what's going to happen later on in history. And that's what the Haftarah is saying. Yeshaya Novi tells the victims of the first Golus, remember Avraham Avinu and how he beat out the four Malachim? So I think based on that we can understand a beautiful Medrash of Chazal in Bereishis Rabba. And this Chazal seems to come out of nowhere unless you take into account the Haftarah which we just learned. Amar Reb Avon in Bereishis Rabba, Parshas Membeis, Simen Beis, Kishem Sheposach Ba'arba Malchios, just as the Torah opens up with a description of four kingdoms. What are the four Malchias? Kedar La'omer, Tidal, Amraphel, Arioch. The four kingdoms were described as waging war against Avraham Avinu. Kach eino chosem ela ba'arba Malchias. So too the end of Tanakh and the end of Jewish history is going to involve four Malchias, four kingdoms. What are the four kingdoms? Malchus Bavel, Malchus Modai, Malchus Yavon, and Malchus Edom. The four kingdoms who are representative of the four major Goliaths, the four major exiles which the Jewish people have lived through, says Reb Avon, these four kingdoms are hinted at the four kings which Avraham Avinu waged war against in Sefer Bereishis. Jewish history opens with four Malchias, and Jewish history closes with four Malchus. In other words, the four kings that Avraham Avinu waged war against are symbolic of the four Goliaths that Klal Yisrael went through.
Who's
Edom?
Could it be
the Edom? The truth is, the Abarbanel talks about how Christendom, I mean, the truth is, the whole Western world is really in a sense Edom. Let me read a little bit more. This is just skipping a little bit further. That same chapter in the Medrash Rabbah, in Bereishis Rabbah, in Dalet. Dover Acher, Vayhi b'mei Amraphel Melech Shinar. Right, the pasuk says it was in the days of Amraphel, the king of Shinar, who was the first to wage war against Avraham Avinu. Says the Medrash, Zobover. The Arioch Melech Elasar, that was the second king. Ze Antiochus, Kedar Laomer Melech Elam, Ze Modai, Visido Melech Goyim, Zo Malchus Edom. Right, each of the four kings explicitly is associated with one of the major kingdoms which tried to subjugate the Jewish people throughout history. Now that's an interesting idea. You know, four kings. Okay, good. Where did Chazal get that from? Where did Chazal come up with this idea that somehow four kings in the ancient world who waged war against Avraham Avinu are somehow symbolic of the four kingdoms which enslaved the Jewish people thousands of years later? I think the basis for this Chazal is exactly this Haftarah which we're reading, the Pesukim in Sefer Yeshaya. Because Yeshaya Hanavi invokes the story of Avraham Avinu and his victory against the four Malachim as being symbolic of the fact that the Jews will be able to overcome any kind of adversity, any kind of difficulty which they're up against, no matter how terrible it is, and the Jews will come out of the Golus Bavel. because they have that example of Avraham Avinu being able to overcome the four malachim, so symbolically the four malachim are really exactly the same as the four primary difficulties which have plagued the Jewish people throughout their history. The four malchias, the four different galias, which have subdued us and subjected us to difficulties. So if Avraham Avinu could beat them, so it means that ultimately we're going to overcome those galias as well. It's a message of hope that the galus is not eternal, but that ultimately we can see a light at the end of the tunnel, just as Avraham Avinu was able to overcome. That's the theme of the rest of the Haftarah. And I'll just quote a few psukim here. I think we got the gist of it, at least from the beginning. But first, let me just read a pasuk or two further, and we'll see one of the perils of Jewish music. Right? So, Ro Iyim Vayiro pasuk hey, when the nations of the world, the islands, saw that Avraham Avinu was so successful, or that the Jewish people are going to be so successful, again, depending on how you interpret the previous psukim, so sa'aretz yachradu, from all corners of the world they shivered, they trembled, karvu vaye'esoyum, they came close, and ishas rieyu yazoru lachiv yomar chazok, each person helped out his fellow, and he encouraged his fellow man by saying, chazok, you know, have strength and go on. Now this pasuk is, it's a famous song in the Jewish world out there, and presumably the message of the song is that we should have achdus, we should encourage one another, we should say to one another chazak, which is a beautiful sentiment. The only problem is that this pasuk is talking about the non-Jewish nations of the world gearing up and giving one another encouragement to be able to wage war against the Jewish people. So it seems like a little bit of an odd pasuk to take to sing and to dance and to make a whole to-do over. But the thing, this part is not on tape. But that's the nature of things. You always have to go back to the source and just see what's being quoted, right? But that's Ish Yisrael Yazaru. The non-Jewish nations will all pledge their help one to another to try to overcome the Jewish people. Each one, the carpenter is encouraging the goldsmith, the one who's making the hammer will encourage the one who's starting the hammer. Omer ladevik tovu vayichazkeu v'masmerim lo yimot. The way the Malbim explains this pasuk, not everybody agrees, but the way the Malbim explains the pasuk, the non-Jewish nations are so anxious to wait, putting the pieces of metal together with glue and a little bit of nails here and there so they can use the sword and run out to battle as quickly as they can. That's how enthusiastic they are about trying to fight back against the Jewish people. But yet, don't worry, the Ato Yisrael Avdi, you are the Jewish people, my servant. Yaakov asher b'charticha, I've chosen you. Zera Avram Ohavi, you are, after all, the descendants of Avram Avinu. Avram Avinu was able to stand up against unbelievable odds. You will be able to do so as well. Asher hechazakticha miksos ha'oretz matzileho kirosicha, I've strengthened you. Va'omar lecha avdi ato b'charticha v'lo ma'asticha, you are my servant, I've chosen you, I haven't rejected you. Al tira kimcha ani. Even though the nations of the world may try to make war against you, and they may try to put you in galus, they may try to destroy you, they may try to persecute you, al tira, don't worry, I'm with you the same way I was with Avraham Avinu. And that's the continuation where we'll just do the last tishtaz also to be afraid. So the last two psukim give us a beautiful image. Hinei samtich l'morag chorutz chadosh bal pifios. I've made you, the Jewish people, you who were a nothing, you who were persecuted, you who were downtrodden, I've made you into a tool that's used for threshing with thick teeth. Something that's used for threshing the grain. Tadush horim v'sadok ugvos kamotz tasim. And you're such a powerful tool that with the teeth, the sharp teeth that you possess, you could take a mountain and grind it up into earth. You know, it looks like the difficulties that are in front of you are as formidable as mountains, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives Klal Yisrael the ability to grind the mountains into dust. Tizreim v'ruach tisoeim. And when you grind up the mountains into dust, it's going to fly away like in the wind. Usarato fitzosam, and the wind is just going to carry away the enemies and the difficulties. Yato togil b'Hashem mikdoshi sel tisalol, and you, Klal Yisrael, will rejoice in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who's given you ultimately the ability to get over the galus, to get over the difficulties, and be able to follow in the example of Avraham Avinu. So we've seen the brief words of the Haftarah, chizuk for the Jewish people who are going through galus. In a more personal sense, they're chizuk for anyone who on a personal level is going through a kind of galus, is going through a difficulty, the realization that no sen layoif koach, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives someone worn out and weary the ability to go on, to persevere. And who's the example that shows us all of this? It's Avraham Avinu. And the war against the four Malachim is simply the prototype of the notion of Rabbim Ba'ad Ma'atim, that the Jewish people, despite all of the odds that we may encounter in history, can take chizuk from the story in Chumash of Avraham Avinu beating out the four Malachim. That's built into our history, our ability to be the victorious despite all of the odds being up against us. We'll pick up Esses Hashem next week with Tashis Vayera, the Haftarah Vayera.
Where's he designated?